Thanks everybody for inviting me here, especially after I forgot that I was supposed to come last year and didn't show up.
So, where did you
it's just a proof of your genuine Christian grace, so forgiven a bloke, I'm really sorry about that, but you know, it's good to be here today. Just a bit of background. I originally grew up around Gunning, north of Canberra. So my mum was still farming there. They've been farming there since 1843. And the really weird thing is that all the Medway boys, eldest sons anyway, have all become farmers, and I was the first one not to do that. And so yeah, it was a bit of a thing to leave the farm and go to Bible college. But and then I've been hanging around. I was a United Church pastor for 17 years, and then I've been part of a group called Crosslink Christian Network for the last 20 something years, and so that network of churches is about 135 around Australia now, and about another 35 or 40 overseas. So, I spend more of my time looking after that network, and I still got a bit of a job in a church in Canberra called Grace Canberra, which is in Belconnen. And so I've been doing church for 48 years, and I still enjoy it. You know, I love my job. I've never been for a job interview, you know, all my life. My father didn't interview me for a job on the farm when I came home from school. He just gave me the three jobs he didn't like: chopping wood, milking the cows, and killing the sheep. So he said I hated this, and my father gave it to me when I was 15. So now it's your turn. So we've had a lot of connection with Coomer and the mountains and so forth over those years, because it's all part of that area, and so we've been out and about around here. And I've been in Canberra for 36 years this year, and I was working up in a little town called Dorrigo up near Coffs Harbour before that, and before that in Sydney, working with street kids in inner city Sydney. So, I didn't really want to come to Canberra, to be honest. I didn't particularly like Canberra. But God had other things in mind, you know, and funny thing about God, he doesn't seem to worry too much about what you like or don't like. he doesn't seem to be, checked out on that basis, you know, because, God has a different way of doing business, and I guess that's why it says in the Bible, you know, my ways are not your ways and my thoughts are not your thoughts, and so that's why we've got to trust, and that's why we've got to obey. And what happens next isn't always going to be what you might prefer. But God plays a long-term game, you know, and none of us have the opportunity of dictating that game. We can discover what it is and join it, but we can't invent it, we can't control it, we can't manipulate it. All we can do is discover it and serve it. And I just want to read a little bit from Hebrews here, Hebrews chapter 11, which is the faith chapter. So I just want to read the last part. And what more shall we say? I didn't have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, gained what was promised, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. I would like to be in that part of it. I haven't had a chance of shutting the mouths of lions yet. I've been in a few church leadership meetings where I've liked them. But it never seemed to work for me, so. But, you know, so here is this testimony of amazing things that happened. But I'm glad that it wrote, they said the next bit, because this is what it says here. Some faced jeers and flogging, even chains, imprisonment. They were put to death by stoning. They were sawed in two. They were killed by the sword. They went about in sheepskins, goatskins, destitute, persecuted and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains, living in caves and holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith. They were all commended because no matter whether they were cutting the mouths of lions or getting sawed in two, they did each of those things for the same reason. And they did each of those things without figuring out how it's going to end up. You know, so, especially in countries like Australia where we've got so much luxury and so much comfort and ease and all that kind of thing, I've just been working a bit in the Middle East, in Turkey and Jordan and in Lebanon and Egypt, and just amazing things that God's doing there now. People are coming to Christ in these countries which have, you know, not seen increase in believers, you know, in any kind of numbers since the Islamic takeover. Now more people are coming to Christ than ever before. Like they got nothing. Missionaries got nothing. People got nothing. Refugees got nothing. But God is doing amazing things. And I sat in a little, a little half derelict building, where this guy and his family are living there. They pay rent to the owner of this half finished building, but they just made a little, two room area, their home, and through the help of a bunch of people, they rented some area downstairs then to run a Bible school there. They run a house church in their home, and now they're running a Bible school downstairs and they're training. They've got 12 and 13 year old kids running house churches there. Kids have, because the guys that we were, the churches that we planted there, they provide education for Syrian children, Syrian refugee children, because they don't have any access to schools and things like that. And so they can't, they're not legally allowed to evangelize adults. They're not legally able to evangelize Lebanese in Lebanon, but they can evangelize the kids of Syrian refugees if the parents agree. And the parents want their kids to be taught. And so they disciple these kids. And, you know, we went to some of their, well, first of all, when we got to the school, the kids are all just out in the playground, gathered in little groups, all crying out to God in prayer and singing and worshiping, you know, Arabic songs. Just amazing. And so, some of the stories from these families were, well, the family that we were with about them in this derelict building, they came to Christ because the girl, the eldest girl in this family, went to the school, learned what it was to know Jesus, went home, and her mother was sick. She laid hands on her mother, and her mother was made well by the power of God. The whole family came to Christ. You know, so like it's just mind-blowing for people like us who struggled around, you know, in Australia and all that kind of thing. And especially when you think about, you know, the years of oppression that have gone on, and the years of strife and all that kind of stuff that had gone on there. And so I'm sitting there listening to this guy talk, you know, to an interpreter, but he says, you know, when they left Syria, they had eight children. Their four eldest children were abducted, and they were abducted in the time of the war by people who go to those war-torn areas to abduct people for sex slave industry. I mean, can you just think about this? In the horror of all this. And so here he is with these other four children in in Lebanon, and he says to me, Sister Wallace, you know, in Syria I had no family, no job, no hope, no idea of anything that was good. He said, I came to Lebanon, I found Jesus through my own daughter. I now have a family, I have hope, I have a job, and I have a future, all because of what Jesus did. Yeah, so if you had a, you know, if you were like in the, whatever, wherever it is in heaven, that you get to figure out where those little, gene connections that make new babies go, and you had a choice between going to Syria or going to Kuma, you're going to choose Kuma every day of the week. But that wouldn't guarantee you're able to do more for God, or see more amazing things than if you chose to go to Syria. So I just have so much respect for these people. The pastor and his wife who pastor that church there, they work with Lebanese pastors and a whole bunch of missionary people. He's a Korean guy, the pastor, and of course in the Middle East, people like us are not all that well accepted because of the attitude amongst Islamic people towards Westerners. So the Western missionaries there, they are doing more of a support act, and the frontline people are all Koreans, mainland Chinese. There's a whole bunch of Chinese people there from Chinese churches. They just come from Western China, and this is part of the Back to Jerusalem thing that you might have heard about, you know, where the Chinese church has taken a specific responsibility to do missional work in all the countries between China and the Middle East. So they're doing it there, and they just arrived there. They're not given any money by their people. They probably have enough to, you know, get some sort of transport to there. When they get there, they got to make their own way and so forth. And so Chinese, the Koreans, some other Asian nations, Central Asian people, they're all working together. And so this guy and his wife, they were in Syria, in the refugee camp in Syria, working with these people, and they had to leave where they were because it was no longer safe. And so the pastor and his wife, they left with the refugee group, and somehow that broke some kind of resistance in those people toward them when they just became part of the whole refugee thing and picked up their belongings and moved with them and so forth. And so in the last 18 months, 160 families have come to Christ. 160 families. So, you know. But that's why all of these people are heroes. They're heroes because some stopped the mouths of lions, and some administered justice, and some got in charge of this and that and everything else, and some were a success story by other means. The other people were a success story by different means. They were a success story because instead of walking away from their faith in God, they got sawn in two for their faith in God, etc., 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 etc. So all these were commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us they would be made perfect. Only together with us. That's an amazing kind of deal. That somehow, whatever we do as part of our way of serving God, in Coomera or Canberra or wherever it is, whatever we do now is connected to these people who have believed the same God, followed the same path, found the same satisfaction and joy just in knowing that the purposes of God are redemptive and amazing and wonderful, and we can serve those with all of our heart, and it's still worthwhile. We can be sworn into, and it's still worthwhile. We can be misunderstood, and it's still worthwhile. We can be whatever. We can be changed, and it's still worthwhile. And here's how it works. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. I came to Christ in faith because I was trying to impress a girl, and I didn't know anything about Jesus. All I did was I saw this girl going to Golden Baptist Church, and I followed her in there. And there was a preacher there from New Zealand that night, and so I came to Christ. When I saw this preacher a year or so later, he was surprised to see me, you know, and I was really excited to see him, you know, because I'd been serving God for a year and I was really turned on. It was just amazing. I'd read the Bible 4 times in the first year that I was a Christian, just because I wanted to find out everything I could find out. And I was real pressing at the time. I was in the shearing thing, so, you know, I used to get my King James Bible and go sit on the wall patch and read away, and I'd read out loud, and the shearers would throw boots at me, and then I'd throw the boots back at them. Somehow we go on, you know. So when I came back to Australia for admittance, we went over to see him, and he said, I never expected to see you. And I said, why not? He said, well, because of all the people I've ever led to faith in Jesus, you're the one I thought had the least chance of making it. He said, you didn't know anything. And I said, yeah, I know. I didn't know anything, but that's the amazing thing about God. You know, over the years since then, when I've been hanging around with people and pleading with Jesus, I keep on remembering my own experience, because some of it seems pretty dodgy and weak and, you know, not likely, but, you know, I keep saying,
no, Brian.
Remember your own experience, because you knew nothing, and this is the grace of God. So when I came to Christ, it was a dramatic thing, and like in a small country town like Gunning, everybody knows everything. Well, no, they actually know more than everything. They know the things that are true, and they know the things that have been made up along the way. So, and the funny thing was, I used to go and drink in the pub every Friday night. Gunning and had one pub. And so little did I know that, I'll
just tell you a story. Do I have time to tell another story?
The way I came to Christ was this. I was sitting down in the pub. I'd started going out with this school teacher. She was a kindergarten teacher in the school. And her one of her students was the son of the local police sergeant who, you know, me and the police sergeant were like this, you know. This is me over here. And he didn't like it very much, and I didn't like him very much either, to be honest. But he was trying to always catch me, and we had hot rod cars. So when I started going out with this girl, I was sitting down the pub this night, and my mates were all sitting around the table, and they said to me, do you know what Graham Fermor is saying about you? And I said, no. And they said, he's saying that Nola, who's my wife now, by the way. Are we right?
You're
right. Is it a warning? That's a warning, is it?
That's a warning, yeah.
Oh, right. So how long have I got?
10 minutes.
Have I got, can you give me 5? Because I just want to explain this. So I'm sitting around the pub and they say, you know, he's saying everywhere that she shouldn't be going out with you because you're not respectable. And so sitting around the pub, here's these blokes who are 18, 19 year olds, and we try to think of what I could do to become respectable. You know? Should I join the scout? You have become a scout leader. I thought, oh no, that'll be every week I've come. You know, so we went through all these things and finally somebody, not me, struck up this idea that I should go to church. And this funny idea that if I went to church once, that would prove that it was a pretty strange kind of line of reasoning, but it was kind of pub reasoning, I reckon. That was how it was. So when I came to Christ, I had this amazing experience. I went to the Methodist, they all went to the Methodist church there, so went to the Methodist minister and I just told him what had happened. And I said, I just need to tell my mates in the pub about this. Now he was a Methodist, and so he said, don't you go anywhere near that pub. And so I thought, I better not then. But, the first Friday night after I came to Christ, I'm sitting at home. This is the first time I've sat at home on a Friday night for as long as I was legally, just before that as well. But, so it was a bit weird. I'm watching TV and I'm thinking about all my mates sitting there in the pub. And so I thought, about 9:45, pub closed at 10. I hopped in the ute, raced into town. I had my King James Bible, under my arm. And I thought, I've got to tell those people about this. So the pub had just closed. So I, went around the back and I sort of got in the door before I realized what I was doing. And I put together this idea that maybe this wasn't going to go down so well. Because I don't think the pub had ever suffered anyone reading the Bible. And I came to know Christ reading the first part of John's Gospel. Because it says there, he came to his own and his own didn't receive him. But to as many as received him, he gave the right to become children of God, children not born of it. Okay, so that was it. So I was reading this to everybody because I thought, well, it happened to me like this, so it should happen to everybody else like this. So I was going to read it. My King James Bible, which had never been read before, it just used to fall open at John chapter 1 because I was always, reading it. And so I raced, got into the bar, looked at all these people, looked at my Bible, and I thought, uh-oh, this isn't going to be good. So I did the only thing I know how to do when I get nervous, and that is I go faster and louder. So I just said to everybody in the bar, I said, I want to read you something. And I didn't stop to hear anything from anybody else. And I just started reading the John's Gospel and all that kind of stuff. And when I got to that part, I read this as loud as I could. And when I finished, there was silence. It wasn't silence in heaven for half an hour, but it was silence in the bar. This was a shock to the system. The culture had been invaded by some strange creature. And I looked over and saw my mates over there, and they were just there. But anyway, what I didn't know was, I left then, I'll tell you about it. But what I didn't know was, 5 years later I found out Tonkin. Anyway, both who used to run the SB bookies thing there, they all started taking bets on me, how long I'd last. and I met him 5 years later, and he said, I made a lot of money out of you. Anyway, here's my last bit. After that I realised that God wanted me to go to Bible college, and this was a really big issue for me because of the culture of my family and all that kind of stuff. And so when I told my father that, who busted his guts to make a living for both of us on the farm, told him I wanted to go to Bible college, he was really upset. Now my father never got angry, he just went silent, he went silent, said nothing, said, okay, that's what you want to do, go do it. And I said, I'll come back afterwards. And he said, no, you're not coming back. If you go, you go. And and then other people around the town started telling me why I was, walking out on my father and all that sort of thing. So when we finally left to go to Bible college, packed up the car and all that sort of thing, I wept my way to Katoomba. I just couldn't figure out how the will of God was so difficult. Because what had started out to be so amazing, so exciting, all that kind of stuff, suddenly I hit the hard core of it, and the hard core was that I knew God. I didn't know much about God, but I knew God wanted me to go to Bible college, and Nola, my wife as well. And so I went off to Bible college. My grandparents didn't talk to me for 2 years. All that kind of stuff. But you know, in the ensuing period, my mother came to Christ. My two sisters came to Christ. I led my grandparents to Christ before they died. My father came to Christ. Everybody came to Christ. And I thought to myself, you know, obedience might cost a bit, but you can't put a cost on, you can't put a value on that. You can't put a value on that. And so the best thing that you can give to anybody, whether they're close to you or far from you, is your passionate, simple obedience to Jesus. So that's what these guys did. And they did it because that's what Jesus did. Who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, that is, put up with stuff. Despising the shame. Think about that. Despising the shame. He didn't just put up with the shame. He despised the shame. Sitting at the right hand of the Father.